and my thanks to everybody for coming out here. In case anyone doesn't know my name, it's Avram David Karnowski. I live on the west side and love coming to the southeast. And that's your credit. But yeah, I think it's very special that people take up time to come and listen to some words. And I hope that what I'm saying, I want to try and tackle a tricky subject. And I think we could get it. But if I'm not being clear, then I want you to ask. If anyone has any questions along the way, please ask. Because it's a subject that we really need to get. So if we don't have it straight, it could be, I don't want my words to be unclear. So having said that, let me tell you first, I'm going to talk maybe like 5 minutes, a little bit about what I want to explain. Right? What are we discussing tonight? Right? So as we just heard, Rosh Hashanah is coming up, and Yom Kippur is coming up, and Sukkot is coming up, and a lot of days, a lot of big days. This season is from the most loaded in the space of time and what we have together. It's pretty incredible what we have, and it culminates at the end with Hoshana Rabbah, and we have Shmini Atzeres and Simchas Torah, and and then comes the winter. But let's not talk about that. Now, I'll tell you the problem, which I think I have, and I think a lot of people have. The problem is that in Judaism in general, we got a lot of conflicting emotions, which we are taught to have, and we must have, and are commanded to have. As an example, let's take Rosh Hashanah as a prime example, but really it's applicable to the whole year. Right, there's a mitzvah in the Torah to fear God, fear Hashem. It's called Yerushamayim, right? Something that we have to fear God. Right, there's a relationship based on fear. Then we're taught that there's a mitzvah, and we say it every day, right? We have to love Hashem, your God, with all our heart, with all our soul, which either means with all your money, with all your might. So there's an intense love going on between us and Hashem. Love and fear in general are two conflicting emotions, right? The way I like to put it is if you take a marriage as an example, right, then there are two types of marriages. One, there's a marriage which, it's not the recommended type, but there are marriages that are based on fear, right? One spouse doesn't want to get the other spouse angry and vice versa, and everyone just tries to do their thing and not bother the other one, and that's a relationship based on fear. It's a relationship, but the core of that relationship is going to be fear. In general, in that relationship, there's not very much love going on between the two. It's just sort of keep to myself, and you keep to yourself, and nobody make any trouble. Then there's marriages which are based on love, right? There's a mutual, I don't know if who was here last time, who wasn't, but we discussed a little bit that love in a marriage is when we're different, very different, and I'll say that again, But we're united in purpose, right? That means that two of us come together to complement each other because we have a common goal. We want to get to one thing together, whatever it may be. And therefore, even though we're different, but we're united in a common purpose. The relationship over there is based on love. But I don't think it's possible, and you could argue with me if you want, I don't think you can have love and fear in a relationship of marriage. It's either I was discussing it with my wife before, and she said, oh yeah, if I drop, if I lose my wallet, then I may be a little scared to tell you about it. But that may be true, but that doesn't mean that the relationship is based on fear. It just means that every so often we all just do stuff which make us uncomfortable to tell the other one. But it doesn't mean that the relationship is based on fear, right? It's fear or love. And in Judaism, in Yiddishkeit, we're told to do both. And Rosh Hashanah, and one more thing, one more emotion, just to make this a little more complicated, is that we need to do everything we're taught by everybody, wherever you look. We are taught that every mitzvah and every service of God has to be done with intense joy. Simcha. Right? We speak about it all the time. Last week's parsha in the Torah portion, we read that all the klalos, all those terrible 98 things we heard about that are going to happen to us if we don't keep Hashem's mitzvahs, they all happened because we didn't serve Hashem, we didn't serve God with enough joy. So we're not going into it now, why it has to be with joy, but there's definitely an emotion that we need to be very, very happy with what we're doing. Again, the two things don't go together. If we're fearful, then we're not happy. We're doing it out of fear, right? So there's fear, awe, there's happiness, simcha, and then there's something called ava, which is love. And Rosh Hashanah is a day where they all come together at one shot. And that's why Rosh Hashanah is a day where we sort of, what am I supposed to be feeling today, right? It's called Yom HaDin. It's the day of judgment. And you go through the davening, the prayers, all speak very, very clearly about what's at stake today, right? You know, just go through the Venasana Tokaf Tefillah, and it talks very, very clearly that life and death we're talking about, right? Who's going to live, who's going to die, who's going to be poor, who's going to be rich, who's going to be peaceful, who's going to be, you know, it goes through every single thing. And it's pretty scary, right? It's a pretty scary day. On the other hand, we come home after davening, for those who could make it to davening, and if we can't, whatever it is, you know, whatever we're able to do, and we'll get to that later, what the role of us who don't go to davening is, if I have time. And we get home, and there's a regular Yom Tov meal going on, right? And there's a commandment that we got to be happy, because it's Yom Tov, right? Regular Yom Tov, like Sukkot, we're happy. We have to make good food, meat, wine. Women get new clothes, jewelry. The kids get whatever makes anybody happy. So we gotta be happy. But why am I happy if today I'm being judged whether I'm supposed to live or not? Right? If anybody noticed, the title of my speech is Exalt and Trepidation. Right? That's a pasuk. It's a verse in Tehillim that says, "Serve God with fear and exalt in trepidation," which just that's Rosh Hashanah. We're exalting, we're happy, we're so happy that's Yom Tov today. And on the other hand, you know, this is our big day, right? Like everybody says, you know, on the day of the big court case, right? It's not the day of the party, the day after the court case. If we're successful, if we win, that's the happy time, right? That's the joyful time. So how do we balance the two? And I want to explain how not just do we balance the two, but the two actually are one. That's why I want to try and explain, if possible. And if there's time for this, no promises. If there's time for this, I want to explain, based on what we're saying, how we come to Rosh Hashanah with this path. How do we merit getting a good judgment on Rosh Hashanah, if there's time for that. So let me start off, that's what I want to discuss. Now let's start off with discussing a thought that I've been thinking about a lot recently, and tell me if this resonates with you. That the thing I've been noticing is this, you know, election season is over, but this was when it started, you know, formulating in my brain, is that if you look at the difference between the leaders, and I'm not getting political here, I'm just trying to bring out a point, that if you look at the difference between the leaders of the secular world, the non-Jewish world, and our leaders, our gedolim, our people who we look up to, right, there's, obviously, I'm not coming to compare them, but look at the difference in how they became who they became. All right. Nope. If you correct me if I'm wrong, but I don't think any president got elected to become president of the United States just because he was sitting in his corner very humbly and just doing his thing, right? There were people just knocked on his door, or there were lines of people just saying, "Please, could you be our leader?" Right? And he said, "Okay, I'll do it for you." Right? So, you know, I don't think we've ever heard of that, right? You know, like, they were just seriously just doing their best, trying to raise their family, and try and become good people, and make their family good people, and just, people just ask them, "Please lead us," and they said, "Okay, we'll do you the favor," right? That's not how it goes. How does it go? We all know too well that it all goes about self-promotion. You need to have some healthy ego in place, and you need to be able to promote yourself, and however much money you have in your campaign, that's how much we're gonna see of you. And you're going to try and show us as much as possible how what you have deserves that I should be your leader. Of course, they will tell you that I'm doing it for you. But like I said, at the end, even if they do work for us, what's motivating them is an ego. It's just, let me get my name out there. Let everybody know everything about me, the good parts at least, right? And cover over the other parts. And I'll be a leader. Now, look at our gedolim, look at our great people of the generation. Now, wherever they may be, they could live in Denver, they could live in Eretz Yisrael, in Israel, they could live in England, wherever they may live, right? None of them, and I could say that with certainty, none of them are public people by nature. None of them are very good speakers, right? They're not polished, good public speakers. All they were doing was they were just sitting in that corner, learning Torah, davening, being good people, trying to better themselves, trying to raise a family. And they were humble, right? They kept to themselves. And what happened was is that people started finding out about them. People saw them. And it became that people started knocking on their doors to ask them for advice. Until you have a phenomenon today where you have a gadol who could have lines and lines out of his door all day. And he's got nothing going for him in terms of physical stuff. He lives in a little shack, right? A one room apartment. Mm-hmm. And he could look not presentable necessarily. and he doesn't have that charm and, what's the word, charisma. Thank you. That's right. Doesn't he? He's not very charismatic, but people are flocking to them. And the difference is striking. So, this comes, you know, this is the point where we need to say that obviously there's something different going on. So the Maharal was a, we spoke about him last time, and we will continue speaking about him, and because he explains everything. And Maharal lived in the 15th century, and he was one of the greatest thinkers of all times. And he has this incredible monumental work, like, you know, 10 volumes maybe, and each one is, you know, it could be a lifetime just to get it. You know, like what he says, and you can read it again and again, and he's incredibly deep. And he explains like this. He says, what does it mean when we talk about Yirah Shamayim? When we talk about fear of heaven, fear of God, what does it mean that we're fearful? Says the Maharal, it doesn't mean that we're scared. That's not the right word for it. We're not scared. We're not scared that we're going to die. We're not scared that maybe he's not going to be nice to me because I didn't behave, and therefore he's going to say, off with your head, right? That's not what it is. What it is it's a realization that he is my only lifeline. It's a realization that I am not a creator. I am a created being, right? In the words of the Maharal, he says that Hashem is the Elah. The Elah is the cause, and I am the Allah. That means I am the effect. When we come to the realization that I don't exist in my own right, I don't exist. I do exist today, but without being connected to Hashem, do I exist in my own right? Does this world exist in its own right, just standing by itself? When I come to the realization that it doesn't, it only exists because the Creator created it, then I have something called Yirah Shamayim. I'm fearful to do something wrong if I know that my only lifeline is by keeping to what He tells me to do. If I understand that my life, I didn't create myself, right? I think we mentioned this last time, that we all have deep down inside us this inner feeling of, I need to exist, right? That we sort of, you know, we may not admit it, but if we like, sort of like, the world wouldn't be the same without me, right? You know, that I need to be here. Of course I need to be here because you know, look at me, right? Like, I need to exist. And really, we don't need to exist. God is the only thing in the world that needs to exist. He decided to create us. And I'm going to get to it in a minute, to why he decided to create us. But the number one thing we need to realize is that I am an effect of a cause. I didn't decide to be here. I am created because Hashem said, I want everybody here and everybody in the world to exist. When I realize that he is my only lifeline, then automatically, if I go off a little bit, if he tells me an exact formula of what to do, and I go off track, I am fearful because then I'm going to cease to exist. Let's say it like this way. You know, in the Zohar HaKadosh, the Holy Zohar, the great, you know, the founder of the Kabbalah, we could call it. He calls this world, it's called Alma de Shikra. It's called the world of falsehood, right? Now what does this mean, that this is the world of falsehood? What it means is that this world, the falsehood of this world is that we live in it and we think it exists in its own right. And we think that this is it. We think that this is the world. In reality, the real world is up there. The real world is God. The real world is Olam Haba, the world to come. This world was created as a means of getting there. It's not the real world. This is not the real place to be. This place exists only as a means of getting to the real world. In a world of falsehood, one thinks that my only way of existing is by self-promotion. Because if I don't promote myself, then nobody's going to know who I am. But that's exactly why this world is false. Because really it's precisely the opposite. As soon as I promote myself on my own, I may look like a big guy, and I may look like a big shot, and I'll get a lot of attention and fans and likes and whatever it may be, but how long is it going to last for? Does it have any continuation, right? How long is the president the president? And even if he gets a double term, and even if after he's finished, he's still active, but ultimately we all know where we're headed. Right? You know, we don't like to think about it, but at some point we need to realize that it's not going to go on forever. My only way of existing forever, this is the secret. How do we exist forever? Which means, how are we going to stay alive forever, even if we may have a separation of body and soul for a short period? But ultimately we want to get Chiyas HaMeisim, we want to get resurrection of the dead, and we want to come back and live in Olam Haba. How do we get that? Our only way of getting that is if we realize that our existence is God and He is somebody that exists forever. Right? We say a pasuk, we say Ani Rishon. God says that I am the first, Vani Achron, and I am the last. Every other beginning starts and has an end. Right? I'll give you an example, something, a simple example. Everything created in this world ultimately is gonna end. Every start, however great it may be, every technology that they come up with today, however smart and amazing it may be, at some point in its life, it's gonna end. You could have a car, right? Every car is gonna be built, it's gonna run, and it's gonna die. At some point. You have a better car, it'll last for another few years, it's gonna go a little faster. At some point, it's gonna end. There's only one beginning that doesn't have an end. And that is HaKadosh Baruch Hu. God is the only existence which just exists forever. Infinitely. If we want to exist forever, we need to come to the realization that our only lifeline of existing forever is if we connect our lives and ourselves and our bodies to the one who exists forever. That is Yirat Shamayim. Yirat Shamayim means is that I realize that my only form of existence is my nullification of self and connecting to Hashem. Now, so far so good? Now, let's go to part two, right? The next emotion that goes through our head is that, oh, so if I cease to exist on my own rights, then what's the point? Maybe I should just declare once and for all to Hashem that, yeah, Hashem, I got it. I know that you are the one. I'm a nothing, and let's just go to sleep for the next so many years, right? So what is my purpose over here? So this we need to understand that it's precisely my job in this world to reveal in my own individual way that Hashem is the one who exists and I don't exist. Let's explain. That means that each of us are different. How do I know that everybody's different? Because if two of us would be the same, God wouldn't have created both of us. He doesn't need two of the same thing. If He created anybody who exists in this world, apparently has something individual to offer. Now, if God created me with my specific talents, what He's telling me is, show in your very own individual special way, in your unique way. Show the world. Be somebody who, when people see you, you are a revelation of God in this world. We need to be people that when people see us, they say, I see you, I see God. You want to know why people are flocking to these humble people who are living in wherever they be in their corners is because when people see them, they see God. They fear them because when we nullify ourselves in our own right and our whole existence is to reveal who Hashem is, when people see us, they see Hashem. We have a neshama inside us. We got a piece of God inside us, so to speak. And when we live our lives in a way that reveals God in this world, when people see us, they say, I see you, I see God. I fear God, I fear you. I respect God and I respect you because you are a representation in this world. Everyone has his own special way, has their own way of how I'm gonna show the world that God exists. When I live my life to the best of my ability, the way Hashem wants me to live, with this I show to everybody, I show my family, I show the world, I show myself that there is a God in this world and He is everything and my only lifeline is my connection to Him. Let's talk a little bit about Simcha, let's talk about joy. Let's explain what makes us happy and what makes us sad, what makes people depressed. What is it? So Rav Moshe Shapiro, who is, again, he passed away a couple of months ago, and a lot of what he says is from the Maharal, but he explains like this. He explains a beautiful thing, is that we have in our heads that, think about it for a moment, what makes us truly happy? So a lot of us come up right away with a thought of, you know, go to a beach somewhere, shut up from everything, done with work, done with family, done with everybody. I'm going to lay there for as long as possible and forget that the world exists. And that's going to be true eternal bliss. Now, anybody who's tried it knows that it's nice and the excitement lasts a little bit. You know, some people are better than others. Some people could stretch it for, you know, a few hours. Some people could do it for a day. But at some point, we're going to get a little itchy and say, hey, what am I doing? You know, like, let's do something, right? We have in our heads that happiness comes from having nothing in our heads. Happiness is when I get everything off, when I'm done. I got no commitments, I'm free. I have freedom, I can do what I like, when I like, how I like, and I'm truly happy. What Moshe Shapiro says is that it's precisely the opposite. Depression sets in when somebody realizes that what I'm doing today has no continuity. I'm living in a certain box, I'm living in a certain space, I'm living in a certain time, and what I'm doing today has no connection to anything. What's going to become of it? So take food as an example, right? We like food and we enjoy food and we use it for good things. But if somebody's life is food, there's going to come a time, there's going to come a point in his life where he realizes that, so what now, right? So food is great, but how does it continue? Like, you know, say it was nice and it lasted 5 minutes, an hour, 2 hours, right? But then what? And that's when depression sets in. A suicidal person is when he gets to a point, God forbid, where he doesn't see any point in continuing because what he's doing has no continuity, right? I like talking about my neighbors, they're not Jewish, across the road from me on the west side, who, it's one of those houses with, 8 families living in one, and I could attest that none of them have a job, and none of them do anything all day. And they sit outside, and I know this, because I'm in and out, and they haven't moved. The whole family, the kid, the parents, I don't know who the mothers, I don't know who the fathers are. There's a group of 15 people who are just sitting, doing nothing. And I wonder, how do they wake up in the morning? And why would you wake up in the morning? To do what? To wake up the next day. But you want to know how they keep on going? Because they've never thought in their lives. They've never for one second sat down to think of, where am I heading with all of this? If they would sit down for one second and realize, where am I getting? Depression would set in immediately, right? Because it has to be like that. What makes us happy is not a lack of connection. It's not freedom. The opposite. What makes us happy is we realize that what we're doing is connected forever. When I live my life in a way that everything I'm doing is connected to Hashem, and that's eternity, I'm a truly happy person. What makes me happy is that I'm living my life in a way that I'm going to live forever. You want to know why I wake up in the morning? I wake up in the morning because today I'm going to try and connect to Hashem as much as I can. And if I do that, my day is going to live forever. It's not gone. It's not gone the next morning when I woke up. That, you know, we say a term all the time that we wish people to have arichas yamim, right? That you should live a long life. And simply we think it means that we should live a long life, right? And it does mean that also. But the Sfas Emes, he was the Ger Rebbe, he explained beautifully that the word arichas yamim doesn't mean a long life, it means a long day, right? There's a term that we say in on the Seder night, we say, we should merit to reach the day that is long, the day itself is long. The Sfas Emes, the Ger Rebbe explains that when I live my day with a connection to Hashem, that day, it lives forever. Arichas yamim means that we wish the person that he should live a life that every day that he has exists forever. My only way of having that is connection to Hashem. And then I'm a truly happy person. Without commitments, without connection, just doing what I want is nice, but as soon as the thought sets in that where is it going, depression comes in right away. So having said all that, if we get back to the original point and we think about it, the emotion of fear, the emotion of happiness, joy, and the emotion of love is all one thing. When I realize that my existence is connection to Hashem, my existence is how much am I going to live my day and my life connected to God, then I fear Him, because if I move off, I've lost everything. The more I stay connected, the happier I am, because now my life is going to live forever. Now what I'm doing has hemshech, it has a continuity. And all this comes from love. Because I love Him so much because I know that He's everything to me. Right? In Tehillim we say, David HaMalach. Let me bring this out as an example. And David HaMalach, King David, he says he was the king. And he's the king of, he's the Mashiach, and his descendant's going to be the Mashiach, the greatest of all times. And he says some scary, scary words. He says about himself some very complimentary things. He says, I'm a cherpas adam uvezui am. He says, I'm a disgrace to humanity. That's what he says. He says, anoichi toila'as v'loyish. I'm a worm, I'm not a person. This is King David talking at the Tehillim. He says, I'm a worm, I'm not a person. What does this mean? What does this mean that he says? And then he says the other half of it in a different place. He says, you want to know who I am? Va'ani tefila. He says, I am prayer. My essence is prayer. And what King David is teaching us is that as a human in my own right, I'm a disgrace. If I exist as a person in myself, however great I may be, there's no point. What's going to become of it? My essence of how I exist is tefillah. My essence is that I'm somebody who's connected to God. And when I'm connected to God, I'm an extension of God. You want to know why King David was the king? Not because he was the king in his own right, because he was a representation of God in this world. The people who are our leaders, the people who are our kings, are people who don't promote themselves. They're people who their existence is a representation of God in this world. Let's talk for a few minutes about Rosh Hashanah. We're running out of time. Rosh Hashanah is, I want to emphasize this. Rosh Hashanah is not a day where we're scared of dying. That's not what it is. It's not a day where we, and Rav Moshe Shapiro explains this very, very clearly. It's not a day where I'm worried, how is my year going to turn out? We are worried. That's not what Rosh Hashanah is. Rosh Hashanah is a day where today we are created. Right? We say in the davening, Zeh hayom techilas ma'asecha zikaron l'rayim rishon. Today is the day, every year in Rosh Hashanah, we get recreated. Really, literally. If you look in the great holy sources, they'll tell you that on Rosh Hashanah there's some form of dying and some form of being reborn. Some form of resurrection of the dead happens on Rosh Hashanah. Rosh Hashanah is the day where God created us anew. When I come to that realization that, hey, I was just created by God, I'm fearful because I know that my whole existence is God. Rosh Hashanah is a day, it's not a day that I'm scared, it's a day of fear and awe that I realize that my very life is dependent on how much I live my life with connection to God. And it's no problem at all to come home from that and be happy. Because this is my happiness. Because if I won't be connected to Him, then I'll be depressed. I wouldn't have anything in my life. Precisely because I realize that today He created me, as it's for that reason that I come home and I'm happy. And I'll go back the next day and I'll be fearful because He created me, and I'll come home and I'll be happy. I'm going to love Him because I love Him because He's everything to me. But I need tefillah. He is my very existence. And my job on Rosh Hashanah is to realize that I want to make my mission statement of this coming year to live my life with as much connection to Him as I can. Living life with connection to God does not mean to spend your day in shul davening and saying tehillim all day. It means going to work, it means eating, it means taking care of the family, doing laundry, changing diapers, whatever stage of life you may be up to. But if you're doing that with a purpose of connection to Hashem, that means you're doing it because you want to stay healthy. Even if we take a vacation, we're doing it because we want to stay sane and we want us to be able to be healthy and be able to continue our service of God. Whatever we do for our kids, for our family, if we're doing it for the purpose of bringing up the next generation, that they should be representation of Hashem in this world, then what I'm doing all day is connection. Everything I do is going to live forever. That is Malchus. That's what it means that we coronate Hashem. We say that He is everything. And my job is my individual way to show Hashem how I'm going to live my life in my very unique way as somebody who shows that Hashem exists. That's what Rosh Hashanah is, and that's why there's something called exalt in trepidation, because I'm exalting that He is everything to me, and therefore I am fearful, because He is everything to me. The two emotions are one thing. There's a pasuk I'm going to finish with this. There's a pasuk in Tehillim, once again, from King David, who is everything to us. And he says, Ki imcha makarachayim, that God, I realize that You are my source of life, bo'orecha nira'or. Through Your light, I will see light. And this is summing up everything in one sentence. Is that Rosh Hashanah and the whole year is a time where we have to come to the realization that He is the source of life. When I realize He's the source of life, then bo'orecha nira'or. Through Your light, I will see light. If I connect to God's light, then I will become a part of that light. If I disconnect from His light and I try and make my own light without Him, it may start as very exciting and there'll be a lot of lights and a lot of fanfare, but ultimately it's going to end in, like every good car starts and ends. That's what it's going to be. Right? Amalek, as the Torah says, they were the first of the nations and they're going to be the last. Because you could be the first, but a first without a connection is going to end. It's going to be eternal destruction. When I realize that God is my source of life, then I realize that through Him is my light. If I live my life with connection to Him, I have everything. If I live my life without connection to Him, I'm left with nothing. So once again, don't think to ourselves that our job is to do nothing. Our job is to do everything. But the job is to do everything to reveal that God is the everything. That's summed up in a sentence. Ki imcha makarachayim, You are my source, and therefore in Rosh Hashanah I want to declare to God in my very unique way, in my special way, I want to say to Hashem, Hashem, I realize that You are everything to me. This coming year, I want to live my life that people should see me and they should see that you are a creation of God. You are somebody who represents God. People respect the Jewish people. And they respect the Jewish people when they see us acting in a way which they see us and they see Hashem. So may we all merit and be zocha to have a kesiva v'chasim, which we have a wonderful year full of good things. We should merit to live our year with continuity, that every day should live forever with understanding of everything I'm doing today with connection to Hashem is going to be around forever. And one day when we get back all together in Olam Haba, we're going to see, look what I created with my very own life. This is my life in front of me. And may we all merit to have a wonderful year with nachas from everybody. Thank you all for coming.
So, as Rosh Hashanah is approaching, there's a lot of very important points to discuss. The first thing I think we have to discuss is that the Mishnah teaches us that it's a Yom Hadin, it's a day of judgment. And the Mishnah in Rosh Hashanah elaborates that four times a year we are judged. On Sukkot, we're judged over rain. On Pesach, we're judged over grain. It's easy to remember, it rhymes. Shavuos, we're judged over fruit. And then finally, in Rosh Hashanah, the whole world is judged upon everything they're going to be granted the whole entire year. So the Ran, one of the earlier Rishonim, has a question. He says, the three times a year, Sukkot, Pesach, and Shavuos, it's very understandable why there's a day of judgment for those specific things, because that's the season. It's the season of rain, it's the season of grain, it's the season of fruit. But why is Rosh Hashanah the time to be judged? What does it have to do with judgment? So he quotes a very interesting medrash. And the medrash teaches us the following, that there's an argument exactly when the world was actually created, and we seemingly go according to the opinion that the world was created the 25th of Elul, which is a couple days ago, I think. So it comes out that 6 days later was actually the creation of man. And that's what we say in the Rosh Hashanah davening, Hayoyim Haras Olam, the world was created. It doesn't really mean the world. It means men and humans were created, and that's really what the world was about. So the Ran over there, it goes in lengthy detail explaining exactly what happened on that sixth day of creation, and hour by hour he explains like how Hashem created man and how he sinned. He was put in Gan Eden and immediately he sinned, and Hashem kicked him out of Gan Eden and he gave him a judgment. And the Medrash ends off, just like Adam was judged, Hashem said, all your future generations are going to be judged on this day just like you were. So the question is, seemingly that's not the best person to try to emulate his judgment. You know, he was the first person who put in this world for a couple of hours and he sinned. And Hashem actually kicked him out of Gan Eden. And through that we got the curse that we have to actually work for stuff, right? It used to be, you know, worry-free world, wake up, take whatever you want from any tree, and that was life. And now we got punished. We have to work for things. So why should this be who the person we're trying to emulate, and that's going to be the day of judgment for future generations. So there's a very interesting idea explained by Rav Chaim Friedlander. He was a big mashgiach in Eretz Yisrael, and he writes the following concept. He says that when it comes to Hashem, punishment is different than when it comes to people. When you think about punishment regarding people, you know, someone gets upset, his friend gets him upset, so what does he do? He goes out of anger and goes and, you know, does something back to get him back. But when it comes to Hashem, punishment is just a way to bring out our potential. That if we're not able to go in a certain path and we're lacking the way we're able to grow, Hashem decides, okay, it's time to punish you and give you a new journey in life. So Adam Arishon, even though originally he was destined just to live in Gan Eden and have a worry-free life, but once Hashem saw he sinned and he wasn't capable, according to his level, we can't totally understand what that means, but the idea is that punishment is that Hashem decided in order for him to reach his potential, he's got to leave Gan Eden and he's got to start working and recognize Hashem through a different path. So this is very important when it comes to judgment of Hashem and Rosh Hashanah especially. You know, we all hope we have a smooth and easy year, but even if things, for us or our friends, something doesn't go exactly the way we planned, we have to realize that really Hashem has our best intention in mind. Just like with Adam, he had a bigger plan, we don't always understand it. But that is the first thing we have to understand. That's what's going on the Day of Judgment, and Hashem has our best interest in mind. Okay, so now we saw how it's a day of judgment. Now the question is, what are you supposed to do on the day of judgment? So there's a famous question asked by Rabbi Shmuel Salanter, which was the leader of the Musar movement, and he says, we know the high holidays, we have Rosh Hashanah and then Yom Kippur. So he says, seemingly, you should do Yom Kippur first and then Rosh Hashanah. You first want to get clean slate, get all the averas out, and then you go to judgment and then you'll have a clean year. Why would you first get judged and then start cleaning yourself over? And to ask this question even more directly, we could just pose the question that why Rosh Hashanah, there's no focus on trying to rectify the sins of the year, right? We don't find that we clap al chait or say vidui like we do on Yom Kippur. So why is that? Why is Rosh Hashanah, the focus is not to try to rectify ourselves and trying to fix ourselves up from the previous year? So he explains a very interesting idea. He based on what we say in the Tehillim, starting in the month of Elul, we say, L'David Hashem Ori V'Gishi, Hashem is our light and our salvation. And the Medrash explains that our salvation is referring to the day of Yom Kippur, and our light is referring to the day of Rosh Hashanah. So our salvation is very simple to understand. Hashem gives us a clean slate, and He forgets about all of our averus. So okay, He's our salvation. But what does that mean, Hashem's our light on Rosh Hashanah? What's this concept about light? So, an explanation simply is as follows, that when someone comes to sin, besides for the actual action they did wrong, they become very distant and they lose focus about their mission in life. And the more they get into sinning, you know, it becomes habitual and they just totally lose focus on the priorities and where they're supposed to be heading and what are they supposed to be doing in life. So Rosh Hashanah is sort of like a flash of light. It's like our wake-up call to refocus. That's what it means. It's our light. Rosh Hashanah is when Hashem gives us this time that we're supposed to just not worry about our past. It's to think about the present and right now, just the first thing before you start dealing about your past is to refocus and figure out what your mission is supposed to be in life. That's the concept of Rosh Hashanah. And based on this, we could also explain another question which is very bothersome about the tefillos. It's the day of judgment, and seemingly we're not allowed to ask for any of our personal needs, right? We don't go to length like we do in the regular Shemona Esrei to daven for money or for health. We don't do any of that. Why is that? Seemingly, if you're getting judged today, you should have a whole checklist of everything you need. So there's a very interesting parable I saw that Rav Matisyahu Salomon brings down. Of course, is a normal parable starts with a king. So this king lived in a city and he ruled over everything. He owned the Home Depot and the Lowe's, everything. So this king wanted a big palace made for him. And finally this contractor decided he's going to build the king a palace. And of course, if you're building something for the king, everything's going to be taken care of. All your labor, all the materials. So on a day-to-day basis, seemingly the contract is only busy with the paint and what type of wood and type of molding and all, etc., all the details. But really, what his mission is, just is to honor the king. So Rav Matisyahu explains, really, that's the difference between the tefillos of Rosh Hashanah and the whole entire year. Because as much as the whole entire year, we're all busy with our details of how much money we need, how much parnasa, how much refuah, health, and all these things, but really, it all starts from the day of Rosh Hashanah. Rosh Hashanah is the time that we're coming to start this agreement and tell Hashem we want to build His world. We want to bring Kavod Shemayim to His world. So Rosh Hashanah is the day we make this declaration. The day we get this inspiration through Hashem giving us this light, and Hashem is our Ari. And after that, then we start the process during the whole year. So even though the whole year doesn't look like that's our mission, but really it's just an offset of what we began on Rosh Hashanah. It's interesting to point out that really, every single day, on a smaller scale, we do the same thing. When is that? The first thing, when we wake up in the morning, we say, Moda Ani. There's actually some opinions that say you could fulfill your whole obligation to daven just by saying Moda Ani. So the question is, what's so special? What's unique about Moda Ani? You wake up in the morning and you say, thank you Hashem for giving me life. What's so special about it? So I saw from Reb Shimshon Pinkus, he brings another mashal, a parable, again with a builder. I guess that's the theme in Denver. There's a lot of building going on. So he says a very interesting parable. He says when a builder comes to build something, the first thing you have to do is draw a blueprint. You got to look at all the plans, and then finally you can start working. So he says when a person wakes up in the morning, you know, they could start kvetching and thinking, you know, I didn't get enough sleep last night, the kids were up, I was thinking about this and that, and if you only focus on yourself, you wake up in the morning, you could have a whole, you know, your day won't be starting off on a good foot. But if you wake up and the first thing, before even thinking about your own personal needs, is reciting Moda Ani and recognizing Hashem and saying, thank you Hashem for giving me light, this will give the tone for the whole day. So just like Rosh Hashanah begins and gives us the tone and sets the tone for how we're going to be the whole year, so too on a smaller scale, every single morning by saying Moda Ani, this could set the scale. Okay, so we've discussed how it's a day of judgment, and what's the purpose of the day, how we're supposed to refocus ourselves, but what is the method that Chazal instituted to go ahead and do this? So we find in our davening that there's three different methods. There's Malchios, Zichronos, and Shofros, right? We declare Hashem's kingdomship, we talk about His remembrances, how Hashem knows everything, and He's going to know everything about us, there's nothing to hide. And Shofros, the idea about the Shofar. So out of the three, which is the main focus of the day? So I think it's the Malchios, it's declaring of Hashem's kingdomship. And the proof for this is because the bracha regarding the day, about Rosh Hashanah, is inserted into the blessing of the Malchios. Because that's the main focus of the day, as we said, to give us this focus of bringing Hashem's kingdomship to this world. But the Vilna Gaon points out, really, that all three things are really tied together. The other two things of Zichronos and Shofros are just ways, practically, for us to bring about Hashem's Malchios in this world. How is that? Zichronos is by internalizing this message, recognizing that really Hashem is in control. He knows everything. He's in control, every detail. And after that, it's not enough. We can't just understand it. We have to actually do something with it. And what's that? That's through the shofar. The shofar represents the Torah and the mitzvahs as the shofar which was blown on Har Sinai, which represents the Torah and the dedication we showed to Hashem that we're going to actually do something after understanding He's our King. Just the last point I want to discuss about Rosh Hashanah is brought out through an interesting Zohar. The Zohar has a very interesting question. He says that it's very interesting to point out, it's a day of judgment, so we should only have one day. So he's bothered, why is there 2 days? What's going on? You know, like, can I go to shul just one day? Like, why do I have to go 2 days, you know? When is the day of judgment? Let's go, whatever the day is, and I'll go. Why do I have to go both days? What's going on? What's the 2 days about? So the Zohar explains something very interesting. He says that the first day is a harsh judgment. The second day is a light judgment. As usual, it's very concise, and he doesn't really explain what he means. So Rav Dessler writes the following idea. He writes that the first day, we are judged more on a personal level. So therefore, it's a much harsher judgment, because Hashem looks at us individually and see if we're worthy. But the second day is a little easier, as the second day is more of a global judgment, as Hashem sees what we're contributing towards society. And Hashem sees, if overall we're contributing to His world, He says, okay, it's worth it to keep you around. Rav Dessler really writes about this concept many places in his Sefer, and especially in the Kuntra Sachese, when he talks about kindness, he writes, really, that's the hallmark of a Jew, by becoming a giver. There's a very interesting vort set over an idea, a concept from Rav Shamshon Rafal Hirsch, that he explains that there's a pasuk in Mishlei that tells us lo ve rasha velo yeshalem. Someone who borrows with no intention to pay back or doesn't pay back is considered a wicked person. Right? When you borrow money, you have to be willing, or you have to have a plan to pay it back. So Rav Hirsch explains, really, this concept is relative to every single person. As when we come into this world, there's so many people throughout the ages who've been contributing to this world in so many ways, you know. Someone invented electricity or whatever people invented and brought to this world. So he says if you come into this world only to take and without trying to give back your own personal strengths and try to, you know, enhance the world, that's like considered a rasha, because you have to become a giver. Just like you can't just go into this world and expect just to take from it without giving back. There's a very interesting story I heard recently about the Rebbetzin of Reb Simcha Wasserman. It's on the West Coast, some people heard about him, that he was a big Rosh Hashiva in L.A. And also later on in his life, he moved to Eretz Yisrael and he had a yeshiva, Or El Chanan. Now, if you go to L.A., it's actually a Lubavitcher yeshiva. He actually was very influential in bringing Chabad to L.A. When he first came, there was a lot of kiruv to be done, and he said, as a Rosh Hashiva, he can't handle doing it. So he called up Chabad to bring them in. But anyways, that's a different story. But the story is, let's focus more about his wife. So there's an interesting story with his Rebbetzin. And they never married, did they have any children. So her whole life, she used to daven that when it came time for them to leave this world, she should pass first, because she said she wouldn't be able to handle being alone. And later on in her life, she switched her davening. She said, no, my husband needs someone to sit Shiva for him. So she used to daven that she should be able to remain in this world after her husband, in order that someone should sit Shiva for him. And the story goes that he was Nifter first, and right immediately after Shiva, a day or two, she was Nifter. So Hashem answered her tefillos. But the question is, what was going through her mind? Why originally was she concerned and she didn't want to be alone? And then eventually she changed her mind that she wanted to outlive her husband. What's going on? So I think the explanation behind the story is because originally she was just thinking about herself. You know, personally, she can't handle being alone. But later she transformed into a giver. She recognized what's more important is to be a giver and to realize that someone has to set Shiva for her husband. So, just to conclude, that the language of the, going back to the Mishnah, which we began, the Mishnah tells us that when everyone is judged, it's, it gives a terminology that we're judged kibnei marun. And this term is very hard to translate, and the Gemara gives three different interpretations about what this means. The first explanation is that it means like a shepherd who looks at his flock. Just like a shepherd gives an overall view, you know, he gives a quick glance and to look at what his sheep, everything, what's going on with the sheep. Hashem looks at this world, gives a quick overview, and see how everything is doing. The second explanation is that it's like someone going up a narrow path. Just like people have to go individually, so too, every single person is individually screened. I remember there was a story where Rav Steinman, a big Rav in Eretz Yisrael, when he came to America about 10 years ago, and he was going through the airport, his gabayim, the people who were like, bringing him and helping him, he was an old man, he was about, let's say, 90s, they said when he went through security, he started crying after he got through the metal detector. So they went over to him, they said, what's going on? They said, imagine just for screening, you know, going through security just to get on a plane, they have to look inside of you and see everything you have. Imagine the day of judgment when Hashem is going to really screen us and see what's going to be. So that's the second opinion, that Hashem screens every single person individually. And the third opinion is, like the Chayale David, like the army of David HaMelech. So what is exactly the difference between all these explanations? He's like a shepherd looking over his sheep, people going individually up a narrow path, or like an army, every single person in the army, in the unit, what's going on? So the Maharal explains that really these are three different ways Hashem does judgment on Rosh Hashanah. The first is just an overview, like we said. The second is more an individual. And the third way is not just focusing on the individual, but seeing how much the individual contributes to the society. And that's the idea of like an army. Just like every single person in the unit counts. And if one person goes down, that's going to affect the whole unit. And each person has to work as a team. So too, in Klal Yisrael, we have to all work as a team. And mentioning before that I'm from Atlanta, personally, I'm sure everyone's been following the news with all the hurricanes. So I'm sure everyone heard that the Atlanta community hosted over 1,000 people for a week. My father was very happy. He owns a Chinese restaurant, so he was busy for. But I called my parents. Someone called me up, like Erev Shabbos, like 2 hours before, that they were stuck on the highway for like 20 hours. So I don't know how many people didn't make it to Shabbos, but this person arrived. He needed a place for Shabbos. I called my parents, and they stayed by my house in Atlanta, and they came really 3 minutes before it was time for lift benching. I think if you're pikuach nefesh, I think it could be dangerous. I think you could continue, yeah. Yeah, I don't know if you're close. It depends.
But you probably couldn't buy gas, and you couldn't. You know, like there could be some complications.
Yeah. But anyways, the idea is that people, no one even know who these people are. You know, they're going to be gone in a week, and still, amazing chesed. This is what Klal Yisrael really is. And just to recap, so we basically discussed 4 different ideas. That's why we have 4 meals in Rosh Hashanah. So you could think about 1 idea per meal. So the first idea is that how it's the day of judgment, and realize that even when judgment doesn't seem so fair or understanding, we have to realize just like when Hashem judged Adam, he had his best intention in mind, so too when he judges us, he has our best intention. The second point is that what is the idea of Rosh Hashanah? When it comes to the day of judgment, what are we supposed to do? So the concept is that Hashem Uri, it's a day of refocusing and seeing this light, and trying to refocus on our mission in life. And that's why we're not so involved in our personal lives, because we have to really show what our mission is in this world. And the third thing is the method about going through this, Chazal Institute, is to declare that Hashem is our King, and try to internalize it, and actually do something with it, and do our service, and do Torah, and through mitzvahs. And fourthly, that it's not only about us and our individual lives, it's how much we can contribute to the whole society and the Klal Yisrael, and we should all have a Gemar Chasima Toiva, a good Rosh Hashanah.